with your host, Lonnie Clark. We stand together and accept that we now live in a world transformed by Fukushima. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time here on UCY.TV Radio. We relentlessly engage every ear that listens. We expose and confront the complete lack of accountability for the nuclear industry. Consider social engineering programs who view our bodies, minds, and souls as assets on a balance sheet. We discuss vital current issues, interview activists, and engage our audience in an effort to allow all voices to be heard. The Age of Vision radio show creates a venue that all will choose. We encourage our listeners to reclaim their power and their courage to take action and save our planet from the ravages of greed and indifference. Our actions matter. Every voice matters. We remind our listeners that happiness is resistance. Love is greater than fear.
Good morning, UCY.TV radio listeners. This is Lonnie Clark with the Age of Fission radio show. Today is November 1st, All Saints Day, 2017. It's 8 o'clock in the morning here on the West Coast. We want to thank our affiliate in Eugene, Oregon, KEPW, for airing our show. They air it now at 6 p.m. on Thursday, and they're looking for slots to air the other 5 days of our show. So thank you, KEPW, for doing that. And I want to thank our guest for being a friend of our show, because he constantly brings new information and what's actually going on with the men and women who are working diligently every day in the anti-nuclear establishment movement, as I call them. They're not people who are self-learners. They're people who are actually in the industry. Thanks, Chuck, for joining us.
It's great to be here.
By the way, that's Chuck usual. Johnson. I forgot to say your name. Chuck Johnson.
Yep.
From Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility. And he is moving on to an organization back east in January, but we'll still acknowledge where he's working diligently to make sure things run smoothly after he exits. So thanks, Chuck, for all your work.
Oh, it's really a lot of fun. If others want to join us, they are more than welcome, as you have.
Yes. Well, I don't think we really, as Kai Hushka from CellDef said yesterday, we haven't got much choice. It does. If we're going to have anything in the future, if we have any kind of responsibility, we must get engaged, because we're, and as Chuck's going to report, we're on the precipice of our government making some serious changes. There are some serious events, like the toxic bleeding up in Hanford, the dumping of that truck on video. So, yep. Chuck, why don't you bring our listeners up to speed about where you were the last time. We've been talking about H.R. 3053, and I think you told me you were in Washington, D.C., lobbying about that.
Yes. H.R. 3053 is a bill that was introduced by Representative Shimkus from Illinois, who's made it one of his career goals in Congress to try to reopen the Yucca Mountain nuclear waste repository that was officially shut down by President Obama back in 2009, I believe it was.
Well, that's the good part about it, because the other parts about 3053, about deregulating nuclear waste, getting rid of environmental impact reports. Donna Gilmore on her website, SantaNofreeSafety.org, has the handouts and information on that straight on her page so that people can go to her page. Please take her information. She's going to be on with us next week talking about this. And
Yeah.
It's
well, you say
stunning.
The good part. I don't think reopening Yucca Mountain is.
Well, that's what I mean about the good part, because I don't think that a lot of the I don't think our elected officials are. I think that's the poison pill for that bill.
Yes, that's true. That in the Senate, that's a non-starter, and that's probably why this bill doesn't have much chance. But this year, he's in addition to reopening Yucca Mountain, he has also added language that would allow the establishment of centralized interim storage sites on a quote voluntary basis end quote. You know, and the devil's in the details there as to which community is it the local community that's going to get a giant tax infusion and jobs, or is it the entire state that's going to have to take on the risk of this additional waste that is coming in? In his bill, it would be just the local community. There's opposition growing to that proposal as well, for the centralized interim storage, both in Texas and in New Mexico, where the two volunteer sites seem to be the most likely ones to try to take advantage of a new law. So what's happening in the House right now is that because the Republicans have a good majority there, and because they've united behind Shimkus's bill, this bill is most likely going to pass sometime in the next few weeks. Nuclear Information and Resource Service has been putting out some wonderful alerts on this bill, urging people to contact their members of Congress to try and, you know, at least reduce the margins, and potentially, depending on what procedure they use to promote this bill, they could actually even win a vote. There are some procedural votes where only a third, if only a third of the members opposed it, it could block it going forward.
Could it be blocked if there was Democrats? Can the Republicans pass it on their own? I guess that's my question.
They can, yes. Ultimately, even if they get blocked on a procedural vote, you know, there's procedural votes that basically cut off debate and have it go straight through Congress without any debate. And there's some speculation that they may try to do that. If they do, then it would only take a third of the members of the House to vote it down, and then that would give the Democrats, if they stayed united, which to some degree, the majority of Democrats have been opposing this legislation historically.
There are 21 of them. I mean, Maxine Waters is one of the first. I find that it's funny. I think she's changed her name to Mimi Waters.
That's
funny.
Yeah, but yeah, I disappointed to see some people who have progressive views on other stuff end up supporting this legislation, because it's foisting the waste generated in one place onto a community that's unwilling to take it, and also ignoring the science in the case of Yucca Mountain, that has indicated that that's a very bad site to store the waste. I mean, this is the current plan, if they actually were to go through with Yucca Mountain, would be to put the waste underground there, and then 100 years later, reopen the site and put titanium drip shields over the top of each of the waste casks. And the reason for that is a lot of water actually travels through that site. It's rather sieve-like.
Uh-huh.
And finds its way down into the aquifer underneath it. And in order to keep the casks from deteriorating too quickly, they would need these shields to take the water drips away from the casks. But because the casks are so hot, this waste stays hot for so long, the titanium shields would melt if they were put on immediately. That's why they have to come back 100 years later, put these titanium shields on top of each of these, and then
yeah, but they don't last for 100 years. They only last for 20 years, these containers that we store them in.
Well, that's it. I mean, Donna Gilmore has shown a lot of the flaws in existing containers. They're supposedly going to design a new container for the permanent emplacement in whatever the permanent dump site is. So hopefully that would be a better container than the current ones. But the current
they
ones
have them in Europe. They have containers in Europe that do not leak. I mean, this is the deal. They're so ripping us off, Chuck. I mean, honestly, they know there's technologies they're ignoring and they don't want to use. I'm sorry, I just think these people are egregious.
Yeah.
They say it's cost saving. Did you see? I'm sure you have. It came from Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility. Bob Alvarez's new report on October 27th this year at 17.
Yep.
I mean, yep. Columbia Generating Station is a bloodbath of money looting. If you read it, it is just outrageously ripping us off and incompetent.
I'm glad you like that report. Yeah, we're pretty happy with it.
I did. By the way, Mimi Waters is not Maxine Waters. This is really interesting. You know who this is? Mimi Waters represents Dana Point in California.
Oh, yeah.
Right near where, I mean, what's shocking is that's near, she's a Republican, obviously. But for someone who is near San Onofre to even put their name on this is beyond comprehension.
Well, this is actually one of the things we're trying to get at in our lobbying is that the one thing that is pushing moving the waste is fear of where it might be emplaced at San Onofre. And it's influenced Senator Feinstein, who's one of the most powerful Democrats in the Senate, who has over the years attempted to not reopen Yucca Mountain because that was taken off the list by Harry Reid and President Obama, but open up a centralized interim storage site away from the cliffs above the beach at San Onofre. And it's understandable given the seismic activity of Southern California and the fact that this is really pretty close to the beach and not in the most sturdy, you know, location physically that you could find. I understand wanting to move it, but then foisting it off on some other community and running the risk of transportation, of moving this extremely dangerous waste.
Not only that.
Because this wouldn't be a permanent site.
Yeah, but Chuck, one of the most egregious things is the disregard. It eliminates environmental impact reports.
That
needs to be transferred. That is beyond, that's just like a slap in the face. For real.
This is kind of the Republicans' reaction, you know, and you know, coming to full flower under Trump with the EPA and their lack of regulation that's happening right now. And this is one of the ways that he's totally in sync with the, you know, radical elements within Republican leadership in the House and Senate, you know, just like tearing down all the environmental agencies. And this bill definitely is in sync with that.
Yeah.
That trend.
This is a very serious thing.
If you left it to the Democrats, they'd probably, you know, put some fig leaves on it to try to make it safer. The ones who want to move the waste, like Feinstein, but it's still an additional danger and hazard just to deal with one situation, you know, at San Onofre and possibly a few other sites where, you know, the site itself is maybe a little more risky than one that you could move it to relatively close by. In the case of San Onofre, there's now some discussion among local groups about moving it to another location on Camp Pendleton, which is actually the San Onofre nuclear plant is on a portion of ceded land from Camp Pendleton. So it's really literally, you know, on the Camp Pendleton overall footprint.
How clever
so
of them!
You could move it inland into a more secure location at Camp Pendleton, but it would require cooperation with the Marine Corps, who hasn't given that yet, and also some of the local people who become so NIMBY that they're not concerned about taking their problem and giving it to somebody else. So,
Nobody wants it in their own backyard. Let's be clear. Nobody wants this. This is not one of those like, oh, you don't want to take our waste. No, this is a serious problem that honestly nobody wants in their neighborhood. Like if they're going to have to store it, I don't comprehend why we don't have the government, they have all kinds of property where they could just out in the middle of the desert where they dumped a billion bombs in the 50s, just centralize it all there.
Well, see, this is what some people would like to do, and this is what the environmental groups have been opposing. And the idea is that if you're transporting this waste, it's extremely hazardous. They know from the last time that they did studies on it in the George W. Bush administration that it would cause 1,000 deaths just from transporting it, just from people being exposed to the radiation. That was actually in the U.S. government report about centralizing all the storage at Hanford under the Global Nuclear Energy Partnership plan that George W. Bush was trying to do, and then they were going to do reprocessing at Hanford. It was a totally crazy scheme, but it was interesting that they actually did the calculations of how much radiation exposure the transportation workers would have. This is with no accidents. It would cause the premature death of 1,000 people because it's that radioactive. But if you had a major accident, you could contaminate an area as badly as a nuclear power accident, you know, or potentially even worse, depending on how much waste you're transporting. So
now we have the waste on the West Coast being stored on site where we know it's an active earthquake fault. Columbia Generating Station has, active earthquake faults. This is ridiculous that this is considered a secondary idea. I think that's why your work is so important because Bob Alvarez's work is so important because they're not going to listen to the reason of the safety. What they are concerned is about the money. And I mean, this is the hard facts of it, that we are secondary to their needs to make money or control territory and be powerful, whichever.
Right. No, that's right. Even with this evidence, though, there is, particularly in these reactor communities where there's a lot of jobs, there's a lot of resistance to understanding the economics of nuclear power. Even, you know, they want to ignore the safety issues, but even the economic ones are even harder to ignore, and yet they managed to do it. And that's been a problem for us in fighting the Columbia Generating Station, because we've been able to demonstrate that it's costing the region significant money, hundreds of millions of dollars annually. If we replaced it, we would be saving. But because public power is committed to this, publicly owned utilities are the utilities that power the area around Hanford and that are on the board of Energy Northwest, and they're just absolutely fierce within their own organizations.
I bet they are. They're making
bank for their industry.
They're making bank. What other industry can you rob the American government and be held 100% unaccountable? I mean, the Price-Anderson Act is going to prevent any of the workers, any of the CEOs, any of the corporations up there from going to jail. They might be fined for them publicly dumping liquid. What'd they say? 3,000 to 5,000 gallons most likely were dropped of liquid waste, just poured out so that they could meet a deadline.
Yeah, it was a really weird way of dealing with their problem,
to dump it onto
previously uncontaminated ground. It's like, why? Why would you do that?
Did you see the videos? The workers didn't have protective gear. The workers were just standing around with their hard hats on and their short sleeve shirts. Like, really? You know what's going to happen? Yeah. Those guys are going to get super sick soon because they were very close to this. So when they
I'm going to have to look at this a little further. I'm not sure how much they were exposed to, but the linear threshold model indicates that any additional exposure is going to have health effects. And so
you can't tell me that standing next to nuclear waste that's being dumped into the ground, highly toxic radioactive waste, less than 20 feet away from it is safe. This thing is moved.
I'm not saying it's safe at all. I just don't know what the concentration was. They're claiming it wasn't very high, but
of course,
I'm going to need to read more about it.
Of course
I haven't looked into it enough. But it was a dumb idea. If they knew there was radioactive material in there, why would you dump it onto the ground? And of course, why, if you're not even clear as to exactly how much, why would you not have workers a little better protected? And why would you be dumping it onto into an area where, you know, you didn't previously have a cleanup site? Then they end up having to dig up the dirt, you know, where that they've now just contaminated.
My question is, what else are you doing that we didn't have a camera on? I mean, that is
That's always a good question. Yeah, that's a good question up there, definitely. Used to be, I mean, given their history, it'll never stop being a good question. Because they've done some pretty crazy stuff up there.
Well, again, it's thanks to the Price-Anderson Act. This is the absurdity of the Price-Anderson Act. To me, that is where, this is why I'm going to college. Because I want to work to stop the Price-Anderson Act. This is the most egregious thing that's ever been written in history. I mean, we have produced the most toxic nuclear... The nuclear waste is the most toxic substance on the planet, really, long-term. And for corporations and individuals to be indemnified, to say that, don't worry, you'll have to pay a penalty, but no one will ever go to jail for knowingly or unknowingly causing harm, including death, through the negligence of nuclear or nuclear waste. That sums up the Price-Anderson Act.
And the whole thing has been cloaked in a national security garb, you know, wrapped in the flag, so to speak, because obviously nuclear weapons predated nuclear power, and nuclear power was going to be the friendly face, or the positive, as they saw it, aspect of developing atomic power. And so they you know, recognize that this is primarily a military issue, and they gave themselves all of the protections that they possibly could, and recognize just potentially how much contamination could be let out if things went wrong. So in order to entice private companies to get involved, they offered them this really sweet deal of caps on how much economic liability they have. You know, the industry wouldn't exist without it.
Let's be clear, that should never have happened. This should have stayed inside the military. It ought to never, ever have been subcontracted, ever. If they really felt like it was that important, I mean, John Goffman and Helen Caldicott, I mean, they did their duty, but really they failed in a way. Like, they did not, yes, they stopped us from having 100 nuclear power plants, but... Mm-hmm. Or what did they want? They wanted 300 nuclear power plants across the country. So we only have 100. But that's not stopping the industry. And Hanford has become a gaping eyesore year after year after. Honestly, Susanna Frame is a hero. I mean, a true hero. The way she goes after. You must, if you haven't seen her latest video from King 5, I suggest everybody go to King 5 on YouTube and just put in... dumping, Hanford dumping, and it'll come up the last 4 or 5 days. She confronted the CEO of one of the high executives, and of course they're in complete denial. And he said to her, guess what? You obviously don't understand the circumstances. And you know what he was alluding to? It doesn't matter what we do, babe. We can do whatever we want with impunity, so get out of here. Seriously, yeah. Chuck.
I haven't seen that yet. I'll take a look at that. But she does a lot of really hard-hitting investigative pieces, and it's worth just watching a series of them. You know, they're stored on the website there for King 5 News in Seattle.
So you've been lobbying in D.C. on this bill. Do you think that it's worth people still calling the representatives that, you know, co-sponsors? Like Lacey Clay is a co-sponsor, Robert Brady from... Pennsylvania, there's a co-sponsor from Illinois, you know, Democrats from, you know, these are Democrats. Salud Carbajal.
We've got a Democrat in Oregon, Kurt Schrader, who's a co-sponsor, who should called and told to vote no on it. I don't know how much impact it'll have, but it will have some impact the more they hear from us. the less likely there'll be to continue to try to push this thing. But, you know, the funny thing is that in the Senate, this thing does not seem to have legs right now. And part of that is that the House keeps insisting on adding Yucca Mountain to whatever this final bill is. And it's always been a Nevada senator and their considerations that are sort of at the center of stopping it, because Nevada is pretty united, with the exception of the one county that would take the waste and get the money. The rest of the state has been fighting it, tooth and nail for decades at this point. And the state of the current governor is just as committed to fighting it. He's a Republican, Sandoval. And so right now in 2018, Senator Dean Heller is up for re-election. He's a Republican the most vulnerable Republican in the Senate, because Nevada is definitely a swing state. It's been trending Democrat, but it goes Republican enough for them to hang on to it if they can, prop this guy up. And passing a bill that includes reopening Yucca Mountain would show weakness on the part of the Nevada delegation that Mitch McConnell and the Senate Republicans don't want to do in 2018. I would look for a chance for a bill like this to pass, probably to be taken more seriously in 2019.
Because they don't want
they
the
don't
fight.
have that situation anymore.
Right.
But I still think, when in talking with the mostly staffs of senators from the West Coast, because that's what I was doing since I'm, from Oregon and represent Washington PSR on nuclear issues, and then also working in conjunction with our LA chapter and the other California chapters of PSR, we met with the staffs of Senator Feinstein, Senator Cantwell of Washington, and Senators Merkley and Wyden of Oregon. And the word is that this bill doesn't seem to have any legs in the Senate at all, because the Senate, as I said, they're not anxious to do Yucca Mountain. They're skeptical that it can be done, because they know how hard the state will fight it. Even if Congress passes the legislation, there'll be, another decade or two in court before they'll even be able to do anything out there.
And in the meantime, it could be a political battering ram.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a loser. And that's why the Senate has been looking at these interim storage sites, because there are some communities that have volunteered. Every time they pop up, though, local opposition just, crystallizes that there is an actual licensed site on a Native American reservation in Utah right now. But it's a private site, and the private utilities, if they were to ship there, would have to pay the costs. They would not lose the liability for the waste. They'd have to maintain the waste themselves privately. One of the reasons they want to ship it to a centralized interim storage site is that the way it's being proposed is it'll be a federal site, and it would no longer be their responsibility. But this private site would be. And the state of Utah and their state senators and the Mormon Church all grew so concerned about this Utah site that they prevailed upon President George W. Bush to establish, a national monument around this site to prevent a rail spur from getting to the this tiny Skull Valley Goshoot Reservation that's, out in the middle of the desert, where citizens of that reservation had voted in favor of doing it. There were only 100 people who were tribal members, and they were looking at getting about $1 million apiece, and none of them were intending on continuing to live there. So I understand why that vote ended up going the way it did. The rest of Utah stopped it. And the same kinds of things are now happening in Texas and New Mexico, where the new centralized interim storage site ideas are being promoted.
So, well, I guess if you're living on native lands that is completely contaminated from the bombing tests of the 50s and 60s and your abandoned uranium mines everywhere, yeah, you might as well make $1 million if they're going to put Yucca Mountain there, I guess.
If they're, in their case, their land was itself wasn't, you know, directly contaminated except through, you know, as all of Utah and Nevada were with bomb testing, but it was, they are really close to the Tooele biological and chemical weapons testing facility, and also I think it's called EnviroCares or some name like that, which is a low-level waste incineration site, which is far from there. So, you know, they're and it's a godforsaken piece of land that the government gave them in the first place, you know, that's not, it's very difficult to, you know, much smaller area than traditionally their tribe had roamed on and used, you know, when they were actually living their traditional lifestyle. So it is understandable. There were people fighting it though. I mean, it was very heavily contested and, but
so you think it's worth it for us to continue, though? It's still worth it for us to continue to lobby our elected officials and tell them all, like, we've got to stand against this because it's going to come back.
This issue is a long-term issue. Yeah, this issue will keep coming up. And
even if it fails this time, it's worth it for us to keep let our elected officials know that this is an important issue to us.
We also don't know for sure what's going to happen in the Senate. I'm just telling you the temperature reading I took just now, you know, is that it's not moving. And but that doesn't mean things can move very fast,
exactly
federally right now. I mean, this is a mercurial situation, and if suddenly Trump got interested in it, it could move up the agenda. It hasn't been a major interest of the Trump administration thus far. And there is some speculation that the nuclear power industry actually doesn't object to this current status because right now the courts have said since Yucca Mountain got canceled by Obama that the utilities don't have to pay into the long-term nuclear waste disposal fund. Because there is no current plan for dealing with it. The court said, you know, until the feds actually develop a plan for storing it, there's no reason why the utilities should have to contribute to the fund. So they're saving money right now, and they're able to take money out of the federal funds to cover their costs of spent fuel storage and dry casks. So, you know, as financially strapped as nuclear power is nationwide, every little bit, every few millions and tens of millions of dollars that they can save on an annual basis helps their bottom line. And they probably figure, well, as long as we can say we're trying to do something, that's as good as doing something. And passing this legislation doesn't really improve things. It just might end up costing us additional money. So that's some of the speculation as to why this isn't happening, because the nuclear power
really
industry
blows me away, Chuck, when you
should
always
be able to get stuff through Congress. Yeah, go ahead.
I just get all excited when it's only about the money. We're talking about long-term public health. We're talking about destroying an environment and the very planet we live on with nuclear waste if this act actually gets considered.
Yeah.
I mean, it is not just about the money, and I have to say it makes me jump up and down every time, because that's the only thing they really do seem to care about is the money. Seriously, if it wasn't that expensive, or if it really made sense, or if they weren't getting some financial benefit, they would, you know, I don't know. Like, they would get their way no matter what. The nuclear industry gets their way.
Well, they do and they don't. I mean, right now, the Westinghouse went bankrupt trying to build four reactors in the South, you know. And
how many of those CEOs
get their way,
are
they
in
got their
jail
way
for
completely
Fukushima
down there? They, you know, they had these utility regulators completely bending over backwards to set everything up, and they had these utilities, you know, being willing to take these financial risks, and they had the federal government backing up the Georgia utility, which is why it's still, you know, trying to finish their two reactors. But the two in South Carolina didn't have this federal backing, and they're done. They didn't ask for it because they were so overconfident that they wouldn't need it. But we're $12 million in loan guarantee, $12 billion, excuse me, in loan guarantees as federal taxpayers in on this. These two nuclear plants are building in Georgia right now. But I think actually the fact that $12 billion is that the federal taxpayers have guaranteed is there means that this. Those will probably be canceled at some point, because this project is going to be so expensive for the ratepayers. At some point, they're just going to, you know, it's going to be too much for even the state of Georgia to handle, and they're going to default on it, and then they'll at least have $12 billion of our money to not have to pay the full cost of the cancellation of this project. But if they finish it, then they'll have to pay for it, you know, as Georgia ratepayers. So it's actually an incentive for them to cancel it, I think, in the long run. They're making a brave face right now that they're still trying to finish these things, but I don't think they will.
What happens when something fails, Chuck? What happens to that facility when they can't do it? What, I mean, they've broken ground. They were actually building, right? They just can't finish the project.
Well, it's not that hard to find out here in the Northwest. You can go see partially built nuclear plants up at SATSIP near Grays Harbor in Washington State, and also over at the Hanford Nuclear Reservation. Right next to the Columbia Generating Station, there are two other reactors that were partially built, one of which looks like it's almost done. You know, it's a completely different design. It's got a round top. It's a pressurized water reactor, whereas the Columbia Generating Station is a boiling water reactor. It looks like a completed reactor, but there's no steam coming out of it because it got canceled by Bonneville in the early 80s. It got halted by Bonneville, officially canceled, not until a decade later. But
like Trojan,
you know, the power. Well, Trojan actually operated. You know, Trojan ran from 75, I'm going to say, until 1993.
Wow!
And so it was, you know, it ran for almost 20 years. And fortunately for Oregonians, the high burn-up fuel issue didn't exist when they closed the Trojan plant. They hadn't approved creating more hazardous, more radioactive spent nuclear fuel by keeping it in reactors for 2 years instead of the original one-year cycles that they would do for refueling, for actually keeping it in 6 years versus 3 years, because you take a third of the core out each time you refuel. But anyway, so Trojan's waste, while it's in dry casks, is less radioactive and therefore less likely for the fuel to fall apart, as is the concern with this high burn-up fuel. But anyway, I didn't mean to get sidetracked into that area. But that is actually, when you're talking about radioactive waste, you're going to have Donna Gilmore on your program. These are the kinds of concerns that you have, is that, you know, even these things that a few years ago we thought were a much safer way to store radioactive material, the dry casks, as opposed to spent fuel pools, or even worse, elevated spent fuel pools, where the water can drain away if the pool cracks, as with Columbia Generating Station and other reactors of that type. You know, the idea was air-cooled dry casks. You could store these things on pads for a fairly long time, and and they could cool down a bit and maybe be a little safer to transfer somewhere else. Well, guess what? This fuel is not as stable. It can fall apart. These casks aren't as strong as we thought. Some people have known for a while that there were flaws in the casks, but now this information is getting dredged up by people like Donna Gilmore.
By citizens. This is the thing, mm-hmm. interestingly enough. This does require citizens to deal with this. You right. know what I mean? Because the government, this is the sad part, is I expect our government to actually be responsible. I think that's where my outrage comes. They're only concerned about the cost. They're in complete denial that this will cause any harm whatsoever to the environment or to people. Don't worry about it. Denying the fact that we have proven that radioactive contamination accumulates, just like they want you not to go get a million x-rays at the dentist. It's the same mm-hmm. thing. We're soaking in it. And let's just yeah. be honest about it. Like, let's don't deny it. Let's say, hey, wow, look what it's done. We've got a cancer epidemic because of it. They don't want to say it because the nuclear industry will go away, as rightly it should. It ought to. Mm-hmm. It ought to be shut down yesterday. We need to end the nuclear yeah. weapons race. That's ridiculous. We don't need more nuclear weapons. We need to decommission. I'm yeah. really against it all.
Well, that's the other arm of nuclear power, of course, the original arm, which is this horrible, nasty, completely against the Geneva Conventions weapon that is indiscriminately kills civilians in addition to military personnel. It's just inherently, in and of itself, an illegal weapon. Unfortunately, the world court kind of blanched a little bit about declaring it that. They were given the opportunity, and they said that, yes, it's an illegal weapon, except if your nation is in danger of being overrun, and then it might be okay to use, which well, is a giant, loophole. But we've got a new treaty right now that the UN passed last summer in July. With 122 nations signing its original language, turning the draft into an actual treaty language.
What's the title of the treaty?
It's funny. I'm not looking at it, but it's basically the nuclear ban treaty. The idea is that it's a treaty for the abolition of nuclear weapons. It was officially open for formal signature in September, and 53 nations signed it. It takes 50 nations to sign and ratify it before it goes into force worldwide. But it's following in the same tradition that the ban on landmines and the ban on chemical weapons has gone in, that these things have gone into force, and not every nation observes them, but the moral power of combined nations, so worldwide, begins to put pressure on those nations that haven't signed it or that aren't observing it. And
it's called
bit by bit, you change it and get people into compliance.
The title is Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons.
There we go. Thank you. I should know this. I'm going to be working
signatories.
Starting in January. Yeah.
Three have ratified.
In January. Yeah.
Where right. are you going to be working in January?
I'll be working for the International Physicians for the Prevention of Nuclear War out of their Boston office. Which is
well,
their,
good, because that means office. I get to poke you about this. I hope you keep coming back because
oh, yeah.
I really want this conversation about the cost of human life and our planet. I mean, even that is, if you want to give that a financial cost, how much is it going to cost to have humans all die and be sick? I mean, let's just get clear. This is a threat
oh, yeah.
to life on our planet. I mean, the nuclear weapons, this, the idea, look what's going on in North Korea, for goodness sakes. Yesterday, I was dumbfounded. The story came out about the nuclear weapons test that they did in North Korea in September left a gaping hole in that mountain that they said was 60 meters by 100 meters. And if anything would happen, like an earthquake or something, it is in big danger of collapse. Even China said it could give radioactive contamination in a hemisphere. They didn't say the northern hemisphere, but in the hemisphere. So which hemisphere are they in? Ours.
Northern, yeah. They're
you
in
know?
Ours.
Like, let's get clear about what China was saying. Or that's the interpretation of it. You know, it's really stunning that these things are being ignored. This is a big issue, this nuclear weapons thing. Because we don't
of
have
course.
To be
attacked. It's not being
directly.
Ignored.
Yes,
it's not
I know.
Being ignored. I think people are really worried about the mental stability of President Trump and Kim Jong-un and a miscalculation or angry decision-making that could cause a huge, you know, tens of millions of people to die as a result of just some either misunderstanding or
vindictive,
you know, insane anger. You know, really. And by pushing North Korea into a corner, it makes it more likely that an accidental war could start. Because as long as they think that, I mean, the whole reason they have nuclear weapons is that they've been, you know, in a state of war with the United States, which has nuclear weapons and has superior military might to North Korea. And has been hostile and threatened to, at times, you know, depending on the administration, threatened to take out their leadership, to, you know, kill their leadership and go for regime change. And they've seen what's happened to countries that haven't built up a deterrent like that. I mean, what happened to Saddam Hussein? What happened to Gaddafi? Those guys, you know, Saddam did disarm, you know, contrary to what Bush and everyone was trying to say, getting into that war, he had dismantled his nuclear weapons complex. And Gaddafi famously did the same thing.
Chuck, do you follow Foreign Policy Magazine online on October 18th?
No, I don't.
Oh, man, they did a great story just on this very theme. We could start an accidental war. Armageddon by accident. I think I covered it on the show briefly. October 18th, Trump and Kim's brinkmanship raises the danger of an accidental conflict on the Korean Peninsula. And they kind of outline that very idea. It is very real. This is a very real thing. And we really have to, like, put our intentions towards having nuclear war not even going to happen. Like, we will prevent it. We have to put our thoughts and things into that.
In the United States, getting rid of nuclear weapons, we are a long way away from that. But particularly with a president like Trump, who doesn't even seem to understand that, you know, we have treaties that stop us from building more. He's questioning why we don't just suddenly start making more nuclear weapons again. And that was the meeting in which Secretary of State Rex Tillerson came out of the meeting calling him a fucking moron, you know. But, you know, he's the president of the United States.
You said
I know. I'm sorry. Am I going to get deep?
Time.
Okay.
No, because today's Wednesday. I don't think they cover today's show anyways. They cover a Thursday show. They just put the RSS feed on. So I don't think we're going to EPW. So
in future, I'll say effing moron.
Yes.
But the situation is in Congress now, there's a growing movement, and it's now gotten a couple of Republicans on it, you know, not enough to win, but hopefully it'll build to basically say that the United States the president of the United States cannot attack another country with nuclear weapons without first getting a declaration of war from the from Congress. So it basically ties his hands if he decides, you know, one morning that tweeting isn't enough, you know, that he's going to actually try to take out Kim Jong-un with nuclear weapons. It would stop this current president from doing that. It wouldn't stop any president from reacting to another country attacking them with nuclear weapons. They could respond to that, but just the first use would have to be approved by Congress.
No preemptive.
Right, and this is one of the things that puts people on a hair trigger, because they don't know if the United States is going to do that or not.
Yeah,
and
but
we don't, you know.
Don't you get the sense that the generals around Trump understand the issue and would not do that themselves? I don't think that they would. You think that they would obey? You think they would obey his order and say, "Okay, let's do it"? You think Mad Dog Mattis would really do that?
I think.
Yeah, I guess his name is Mad Dog Mattis. He probably would do it.
Well, I don't know about him specifically, but I know historically, during the Cuban Missile Crisis, the generals were unanimous that they wanted Kennedy to attack the Russian emplacements and to you know, go ahead and invade Cuba. So, I mean, it was, and they were upset with him for not doing it. And so traditionally, there's plenty of people in the military who want to find a military solution to a problem. And this is, of course, one of those military solutions to the problem of North Korea having nuclear weapons, is to go ahead and attack them. And so I would be very concerned that they would carry out an order. And if Mattis wouldn't go along with it or tried to block it, he could get fired and be replaced almost instantaneously. The commander-in-chief is the commander-in-chief. And the way it's currently set up, it's not set up for anybody to make this decision other than the president. So this is the kind of thing that I think Congress is realizing, and hopefully enough Republicans will realize, that they might want to control this president and keep him from doing something that would cost tens of millions of lives. You know, I mean, it's the worst kind of terrorist act that you can even imagine. You know, it makes all the other terrorist attacks that we've experienced and seen over the last few decades pale in comparison. And it's a state act and it's our country, the one that supposedly cares about the rule of law and cares about the rest of humanity, that's in this position to do this thing. You know, other countries have forsworn first use, and to the extent, I guess, we can trust anybody to actually do what they say they're going to do. I mean, China has said it has a no first use policy, for example. And Russia did at one time. I don't know if Putin has rescinded that, but there's no reason for the United States, as powerful as we are militarily, to have a first use of nuclear weapons policy still.
It's been theorized and I think more generally accepted, I don't know if I agree with the idea, but that nuclear weapons makes the world safer, because if everybody has a nuclear weapon, nobody's going to use it because the cost is going to be too grave and the consequences too long term. I seriously disagree with that. I think we need to disarm all nuclear weapons and keep that science under study still. I'm not saying ignore nuclear, but we need to keep it under a tight study. We need to not use it for war and weapons or medicine. We need to figure out what the heck this stuff is. It's good for jet propulsion, I guess. But this is completely ridiculous, you know?
I'm not agreeing with a couple of things you just said, but, you know, for one thing, medicine. I think that nuclear medicine is helpful to some people. There's some people have lived longer as a result of cancer treatments that they've gotten. Certainly using imaging, you know, helps to diagnose problems that people are having.
That
can be, you know, I mean, so I wouldn't throw out nuclear medicine at all.
If we stop with the war machine, we could probably develop our nuclear medicine industry at a more refined rate than what we currently have. Because right now, I think it's crude. And it is really basically, I mean, there's so many more things that we could do to remediate our planet, to turn our lives around, to turn our planet around. I think that the whole like the whole cancer thing, people who get cancer, I don't believe, I personally disagree 100% with the whole thing about radiation to cure cancer. There are ways that we can do it that are in more in harmony with our bodies that give you more long-term ways. Because you get radiated now, but 10 years from now again, you get cancer again.
Yeah, no, that's really true. I mean, this is one of the reasons why, and doctors, people who are studying this understand that. It's not like they're not understanding that.
Well, they don't tell the people.
And it's one of the reasons why they're trying to refine, such things, do targeting so that the radiation only hits the cancer, if possible. And then some types of cancer, you're able to do that. There are other cases where they have alternative therapies that don't involve radiation. Drugs that can kill it that do not involve also having people get irradiated, because the side effects, even if you don't get a cancer, the side effects can be really harsh on people and can really harm tissue. No question about it. And doctors know that better, who are working this stuff, know that better than anyone, because they have to deal with those side effects in their patients.
There was a doctor in Washington that I heard on NPR being interviewed. He got fired because he mixed, quote, natural alternative medicine with his cancer. He said, look, we don't want to have, like, whitewash. We don't want to use it like we're whitewashing the fence. You use it when you need it. And so he mixed it, and his patients all had a very high recovery rate. They fired him for using alternative medicine and herbs and things like that and diet and making that an integral part of his system.
Yeah.
So this is
there are those, right. I mean, there's definitely a fight going on in medicine over what is legitimate treatment and what isn't. I have not, I'm knocking on wood, had to face the cancer threat other than, well, I shouldn't say that. I've had, skin cancer in a few places.
So you have had it.
Myself.
We have about two minutes left, Chuck. I just want to kind of give you the heads up. Is there anything that you're working on that you want to make sure you get out there that people know about to get going on? We have about 2 minutes. I know it's not much time, but you could summarize it.
Well, the thing I would say is here in the Northwest, we still have this Columbia Generating Station, which is generating, as you said, this Bob Alvarez report, and you can go to our website and get links to it and take a look at it. That shows that we have as many curies of radioactivity at the Columbia Generating Station as on the entire rest of the Hanford Nuclear Reservation where it sits. And if we continue to operate it, we will generate even more. This is a really big reactor. It's a nuclear waste generator of massive proportions. We need help shutting it down. If you're in a district that's publicly owned utility, like the Eugene Water and Electric Board or the Springfield Utility Board or Seattle City Light or a number of others in the Northwest, you have the power to get your utility to working through the Public Power Council and the Bonneville Power Administrator. Get this thing shut down. It's costing us money, and it is a hazard to our region and to the Columbia River.
I'm going to jump in. We have about 10 seconds left. Thank you, Chuck Johnson from Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility. Really appreciate it. Do go to their website. Put your courage feet on. Take some action. And if you're in the Northwest, let's make these phone calls to the utility district. Take care. Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chuck.